Good morning. This is a opening on a big Monday morning of the Joint Committee on Ways and Means, Subcommittee on Human Services, and we started June already. I don't believe this. June 4th, 2001, and it's work session on Senate Bill 5527, Department of Human Services, Senior and Disabled Services Division. I am going to surely send a call members to get them here. We've changed the schedule somewhat in the building. Now our, although we've been meeting at 8 officially all morning, subs will meet at 8, and we will discontinue at 9:45. So we do not have, like we did before, 2 hours to meet, and then there will be a 15-minute break, and then the afternoon subs will meet at 10. And we're really gearing to get all of our work done, and hopefully that if we all get our work done and we're very attentive and on time, we will be able to move towards getting things out of this pipeline, and hopefully move towards adjournment expeditiously. That's my hope. And also that the agendas now are subject to change. So it's not like where it was before. You might get a posting within, in some cases, a few minutes or seconds. But it is where we're now in the process of trying to whittle down and to try to get us budgets done and to get us out of the building. You're taking the odds now on when we're going to sine die, and we have a clock now. Thank you. So with that, Mr. Britton.
Madam Chair, can we move that a quorum in this committee consists of one member of the Senate, one member of the House, and our chair?
Yeah, yeah, we're a quorum. We've got a call in for the other members.
Temporary
to show up.
Temporary suspension of the rule.
In fact, I know that Representative Patridge is in his office because I met him downstairs. And where are the chronologically advantaged members?
I don't know. I didn't give my friend a wake-up.
It might be that if we set this meeting at 7:30 in the morning, that perhaps they would arrive by 8. Do you think that might be something that we should entertain? Here's my good colleague from Canby. I just made the comment that perhaps if we convened at 7:30 or 7:45, that would then give us that 15-minute lag time for individuals to arrive here by 8, do you think? I think that's
right.
We just need
one senator. Is that allow me time to run upstairs and get my
material? No. Allow you to call. Damn.
I don't know if anyone answers the phone.
I mean, I got up early this morning and I went that long.
I couldn't get through on the parkway. Backed up all the way to Chamawa or whatever.
Really? Is it wrecked on the freeway this morning?
Well, it must be closer into town. So I back, spun around and went down the highway down to 22 and came in.
You had a big accident out there or something?
I don't know. I didn't see. We weren't moving.
Yeah. Well, not so we don't leave.
No, we're trapped.
we'll be at ease for a little bit until one more senator arrives.
Can you call up to my office, Shirley? Would you mind? 61423. See if someone answers the phone. They just walked in.
Jackie?
Yes.
And members, Len Hannon went to MedPAC on Friday to have tests, and I talked to Dixie on Saturday morning, and he had his consultation and tests, except they didn't get all the tests completed but, you know, he's okay. And so that he's having further tests today, and he'll be back tomorrow.
I better go up and help her. I'm a gallant kind of guy.
I'm gonna do a memorandum to committee members. A strong one. If they expect it, by your side.
Which is perfect.
This is just franchise fee thing.
I don't think she heard that.
What was that?
Yeah. I said because we weren't here on time, somebody's here. Bill doesn't get heard on schedule tomorrow, next week, tomorrow. That's what happens.
But your franchise fee will touch me.
No, it's not my bill. It's Jenny Lang. Remember when they came up
with
the cities and all of that?
Kind of a nothing bill the last time I looked at it. Have they tweaked it again?
Well, Lane asked me to do a work group after that hearing.
Yeah.
And so what we've got is two different versions of the amendment.
That's the way it works.
This version, they're exactly the same except for subsection 3. Isn't
it says...
Basically, what they did is they narrowed it to franchise fees as opposed to, remember, the people came to the table and said that, you know, the way it was written could be a parking permit fee or building, you know, fee, everything. Right? So we tightened that up, and then they backed off on the...
Good. In the weekend, did you have... No, I didn't.
There was another fee that was in there, relocation. They backed off on that, too. So basically, it's down to franchise fee. And then they went back, and they adjusted it quarterly instead of annual. That was another issue.
Oh, yeah, that was another issue.
Right.
Yeah.
And then the cities are not happy with this, but what this does is this allows the utility commissions to show everything on the bill as opposed to having the 4%. Embedded,
yeah, 4%, and then there was a 4% embedded, right, and then above
right.
That had to be shown, right now it's usually 3%.
Right. See, and their goal is, we understand it, is to be able to show their rates competitively with other companies.
We wouldn't do that yet.
And then it makes it a non-level playing field for them.
And there's some of the companies that don't have that 4% in their rate.
Right.
But that never quite understood.
Yeah. And then...
Are we going to see that today?
No, I don't think so. I have the amendments back.
Hey, what are the cities saying about it? Let's report them, say that.
Well, they don't like it at all.
colleagues, it is very vital and very, very important that we have you here on 8 o'clock to start. For not only because the agencies have been advised to be here, but your time has been cut from 2 hours to an hour and 45 minutes so that we can then adjourn and give the afternoon committee, which will follow us, at 10 o'clock. And so I will ask you to make every effort to be here on time. I just talked to, we've got a lot of agencies to get through. We've got their budgets to do, and I may just hold up all of the other bills until these budgets are done. It is imperative that when you're on this committee, on these work committees, that we need to get this work done so that we can begin to work to get out of this building. And we can't do that unless you're here for work session. Work sessions require quorum. It's not like we're doing agency overview. So I'm asking you to please be here on time. Your time has been cut by 15 minutes, and if you're not here on time, that means that we're have cutting it even shorter, and I'm not going to rush and pass out budgets. Just so you know, it's going to be, we're working them, and to make sure that the budget that we pass out of this committee is good, sound budget policy. So I'm... So if we've got to stay here beyond the time, we will stay here until these budgets are done. Mr. Britton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, today's work session is on Senate Bill 5527 related to the Senior and Disabled Services Division's budget. And I note here, I've handed out a brief memo and spreadsheet for all of you to follow along with. The 2001-03 Governor's recommended budget for SDSD is $1.3 billion total funds, 988.94 FTE. This is an increase from the 99-01 estimated expenditures, but a decrease from the 2001-03 current service level as calculated by the Legislative Fiscal Office. I note on the front page of the memo the issues that we discussed related to the governor's budget, and I will read them off for you. We talked about the elimination of the Oregon Project Independence, the elimination of Medicaid long-term care services to persons in impairment levels 15 through 17. We talked about the fact that in the governor's budget, nursing facility rates were increased by a medical inflation factor, but not rebased. We talked about a reduction package that restructured community-based rates for assisted living facilities, adult foster homes, residential care facilities, and also reduced the number of monthly hours, the average monthly hours for the client-employed providers who provide in-home services to Medicaid clients. We noted that there was a reduction to case management and central administration staff, 52 FTE field staff, and 13 FTE administrative staff. We discussed those cost drivers of nursing facility costs. We talked about occupancy levels in nursing facilities and Medicaid rates. The issue of assisted living facilities came up. The fact that the state had made loans to a number of these assisted living facilities, and there was a risk of default resulting from the proposed rate reductions that were included in the restructuring of community-based rates. We discussed agency performance measures. We talked about the differences in rates for nursing facilities, substitute homes, and in-home care. The issue related to Oregon Project Independence of the amount of fees collected by area agencies on aging came up, and recently SDSD provided some data on the amount of fees that have been collected by the AAAs related to Oregon Project Independence. I note here that House Bill 2243 There were two policy option packages that rely on the passage of House Bill 2243 to increase state recoveries. This reduces in the governor's budget the general fund need by $1.6 million. We discussed the general assistance program. And finally, I note here that we talked a little bit about the Older Americans Act and the increase in the revenue for the Older Americans Act related to the Family Caregiver Act that was passed by Congress. Now, I note here that the attached spreadsheet summarizes the LFO's recommended adjustments to the governor's budget. As I've said before, these adjustments are very preliminary, and in the case of SDSD, they are very, very preliminary, and I'll explain that in a moment. And LFO expects that these recommendations will be changed at the final DHS budget work session when we get to that. So with that, I would like to turn to the spreadsheet and go over it briefly.
John, I thought we also discussed at some length the employment initiative and possible waiver for doing some sort of match with the AAA money with regard to Project Independence or something along those lines.
Absolutely. I noted some of the things that I had taken notes on, Representative Schrader, in my book. I thumbed through my book, and where I took a lot of notes, those were sort of the issues that I highlighted. But this is not by any means an exhaustive list. On the spreadsheet, I note that the governor's printed budget, again, about $1.3 billion, 1,046 positions, 988.94 FTEs. So all of these are representative of adjustments to the governor's printed budget. The technical adjustments, lines 4 through 8, you're very familiar with. PERS rate reduction, Attorney General rate reduction, the Department of Administrative Services Human Resources Service Division assessment, the Secretary of State Audits Division assessment, and telecommunications long-distance rate reductions are all listed here for you to see.
Representative Schrader.
The telecommunications, I understand that savings may not materialize now.
Madam Chair and Representative Schrader, that was what I heard. I don't know exactly what that means. What you just said was exactly what I heard on Friday afternoon, and I don't know what that means. But these were adjustments that were given to us by the agency based on the new long-distance charge per minute. But again, I don't exactly know what that means as far as not, you know, the savings not materializing.
I think the contract wasn't let, and so they're looking at it, and so if there are savings, it would be pretty late and small enough, Chinese, is what I understand.
If that comes to light, Representative Schrader and members, we will probably make adjustments to budgets to reverse the reductions if the savings are not going to materialize. But I'll have to find out more about that. You'll notice lines,
Madam Chair.
Senator Duffin.
Is that something we're going to find out before we finalize budgets? Is that what you're
yes.
saying, John?
Madam Chair and members, that's my intention is to go back
we'll
and
find
ask.
Out during the interim then.
Well, I don't know. I have heard exactly what Representative Schrader mentioned, and I'll need to find out what that means, that savings will not materialize. I don't know what that means. Lines 10 through 31, you'll see an awful lot of text, but few numbers. And what I need to do at this point is to relook at the reshoot items. I was looking at this yesterday at some length and discovered some possible problems. So I'm not recommending a number of the items on the reshoot until I'm clear on what's going on in the reshoot. I would note for the record that The reshoot typically is an adjustment to the governor's printed budget. It appears that some of the reshoot items that were included may be adjustments to the governor's revised budget.
Mm.
And I need to be clear on what those adjustments were and want to meet with the agency immediately following this hearing this morning.
This is the revised
issue. The lines that I have included, I am reasonably confident about, and would propose to go over those this morning, Madam Chair.
Okay.
So line 10, independent choices, waiver delay. This is an impact on spousal pay. The spousal pay program is a essentially a non-Medicaid program. It's funded with general fund, and it is a situation where the spouse provides in-home services to his or her partner and paid by SDSD in lieu of a Medicaid in-home provider being paid to provide the same services. And in the governor's recommended budget, there is a waiver, or the assumption that a waiver called Independent Choices Waiver would kick in, I believe, the 1st of July. And that waiver would allow for some of these persons to be paid Medicaid rates, so that the federal government would be picking up some of the cost of the care provided by a spouse. What this reshoot item is the fact that Independent Choices Waiver implementation is expected to be delayed. It will not start on the 1st of July, but will start sometime later, I believe October sometime. And this is the effect of that. This is the effect of general fund having to be used in lieu of some Medicaid federal dollars. So that's line 10. Lines 17 and 18 relate to each other. The first, line 17, is to fund more investigatory staff positions as required by the Healthcare Financing Administration. This would be an increase of total funds of $2.3 million, 15 positions and 15 FTE. And you can see on line 18 that the agency is proposing to use some additional other funds carry over from the current biennium to fund the general fund portion of that investigatory staff. Line 24, Area Agency on Aging transfer staff earning more favorable match. This was a look, this was also in the rebalance for the 1999-01 biennium. And what this indicates is that based on timesheets and looking at how the staff are actually using their time, they are able to charge more to Medicaid than previously thought. This is a savings then of $473,000 of general fund, which is replaced by a like amount of federal funds. Line 26, a number of years ago, in 1994, I believe, SDSD provided an advance payment, I believe, on Older Americans Act, and the area agencies on aging that received that advance payment are now paying it back. They paid off most of it during the current biennium. This is the remaining portion that is to be paid off during the 2001-03 biennium. This is other funds revenue of $285,000, and again, it replaces a like amount of general funds. Turning the page over, line 27, in this situation, the Department of Human Services is removing a forecasting position from SDSD, transferring it to the director's office. You'll notice over on the far right that there's a reduction of one position, one FTE, and this was the biennial cost of that position line 28, then is the charge or the increase in prorate now that that position has left SDSD and is in the director's office. All DHS agencies have to pay a portion of the cost. Line 28 represents SDSD's piece of that particular cost for the position that was transferred out of SDSD into the director's office. Line 29, this is a similar situation except that the forecasting position was moved from the Office of Medical Assistance Programs to the director's office. And this is the share of prorate or the increase in prorate that SDSD needs to pick up.
Senator Yee. Yes.
What is the percentage of prorate they have to pay?
Madam Chair and Senator Yee, I don't know, and I will have to check on that.
And this is to pay for central services?
This is prorate. Senator Yee, is used to pay for central services, typically in the director's service, in the director's office. These particular ones relate to fund forecasting positions, one that was moved from SDSD and one that was moved from the Office of Medical Assistance.
Forecast, Madam Chair.
Senator Yee.
Forecast for the economy or forecast for caseloads?
Madam Chair and Senator Yee, I believe it's forecasting for caseloads.
Madam Chair, I can sort of help Senator Yee if you'd like on the prorate real quickly. Members of the committee, Doug Wilson, Administrator of the Office of Finance and Policy Analysis. All the charges that are part of the central services, for a lack of a better term, are charged back to the division on various bases. In this case, these are based on FTE. In each of the divisions, so we take the total cost and divide them of FTE. In other areas like information systems, the charge is based on an estimated amount of time that they spend on SDSD or OMAP or AFS workload. And like in the personnel area, it's based on the number of FTE. So it's a chargeback. It's based on an allocation plan that's approved by the federal government. And these positions that we're talking about here are forecasting of caseloads, which we have centralized over the past year into one unit, and they're doing it for almost all the caseloads, or will in the near future do it for all the caseloads of the department.
Madam Chair, a question for Doug.
Follow-up?
Yes, follow-up. So what percentage of the payroll or FTE do you charge for central service?
Madam Chair, Senator, I would have to get this one's based on FTE. I would have to find out exactly how much you're asking, what percentage, and that I don't have off the top of my head, and I will try to get that information to you.
Madam Chair, I just thought 11,111 sounds pretty high for central service charge per FTE.
Oh, Madam Chair, Senator, we're looking at apples and oranges in a case here. In this case, this is the cost, SDSD's share of this one position, or these two, $8,700 and $11,000, two separate positions. That means, let's say it cost that position, if you take a look at line 27, that position cost, looking at total funds, $106,000. SDSD's share of that $106,000 was $16,000, so that's their prorated share of that position.
Sounds like 16%.
Yeah. Roughly 16%. SDSD's share of the total cost is roughly 16%.
Depends upon who uses it.
Sounds pretty high for assessment for central service.
Madam Chair, Senator, it's not necessarily assessment on that one position. We're spreading the cost of that one position, or charging for the cost of that one position, and SDSD's share of that cost is the $16,000, or 16% of that position is paid by SDSD. And that all adds up across all divisions to 100% of that position. I can explain this after and try to illustrate
that. What is their share of the use of
right.
The
position. Yes. That is right, Senator Yee.
Senator Hartung.
Yeah, I was just going to make a point that Doug did, and you look at line 29, the OMAP, why they apparently use 21% of the 106,000. Would that be correct?
Madam Chair, Senator Parton, these are two different positions, so in that case, I'd have to go back. It would roughly be the same percentage. This position was a higher position from OMAP than it was from SDSD, so the cost is slightly different than between the two positions. But the cost per division or the share should be roughly the same.
It should all come up $306,000.
Madam Chair and members, line 30 is related to contract registered nurses. This would be to shift funding from services and supplies to special pay. It is a technical adjustment and has no net expenditure limitation consequence. Finally, higher revenue from the Older Americans Act related to the Family Caregiver Act of $3.9 million of federal funds limitation. The only other adjustment that I would recommend this morning has to do simply with line 34, which is a 1% out-of-state travel reduction that you're already familiar with. Now, I would note then on line 35 that there is a restore Medicaid services to persons in survival priority levels, or these are impairment levels 15 through 17. I want to be clear with the agency on what that the cost of adding that back is, but it is the intention of the governor and the co-chairs at this point to reverse that reduction that's in the governor's budget and add it back in. But I want to make sure that I'm clear of the precise cost.
And that shifts, Madam Chair?
Senator Duncan.
Yeah, and that, as I recall, that really impacts the federal, too, right?
Yes.
There's a...
Madam Chair and Senator Duncan, absolutely. This is a Medicaid cost, so it's roughly 40% state funding, 60%
federal. We'll get matched, so we'll get more money back.
The cost of that is in the order of $9.5 million, general fund. And that represents 40% of the total cost. But I want to be sure on what the precise number is.
Just don't have that.
I'm just trying to find something in the book.
With that, Madam Chair, I would turn it back to you.
You did not mention, and I need to have some discussion on the issue of the assisted living facilities and the status and where we are on that. So,
Madam Chair and members, I have not seen anything as far as an update as to where we are on the assisted living facility rates and the possible default of state loans. Mm-hmm. I haven't seen anything on that. We've asked the Department of Administrative Services to provide that information, and I think they are still working on that.
Madam Chair.
Representative Bates.
Well, we have a chance to have a discussion on rebasing of nursing homes and OPI also.
Yes.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, George Naughton with the Department of Administrative Services. As this committee is well aware, we have been working on this assisted living facility issue and the rate structure for, seems like, several months now. As of Friday, we spoke with Mark Gibson in the governor's office, and our plan is to get a final recommendations to you by the end of this week. We've asked the agency, SDSC, to go back and reprice something, which their work will be done to us this Wednesday, and then we'll be bringing to you the governor's recommendation as of the end of this week. So, Madam Chair, I apologize for this delay, but it is a very complicated issue, and we want to make sure that the decision we make, we want to be aware of what the long-term implications of that may be. So, Madam Chair, I apologize for the delay that you've continued to see over and over with this, but we will have something to you by the end of this week.
Representative Schrader.
I hope that the preferred solution that's brought forward would validate some of what the governor has in there, because I think most of the concept that he brought forward about basing the level of support on acuity has a lot of merit. There are some problems because of the build-out that has occurred. I don't think we're entirely on the hook for that, but we do want the facilities to continue, and I think some modifications probably a good idea, but I would hope he would not give up entirely on that that whole concept.
Madam Chair, Representative Schrager, that is the struggle that we've been dealing with over this period of months, is that we believe the philosophy is very sound. The problem is that we have different cost structures within these different facilities. We need to make sure that whatever we do is not going to adversely impact those clients, because we want to take care of those folks. So we're trying to reach that balance where we're balancing out the needs of those clients with trying to move toward a more equitable situation for the whole system.
Follow up.
I also hope that we look to the Housing and Community Services budget to help solve this problem. This is their arena. The problem that we're talking about is not a medical problem. It's not an SDSD problem, if you will. This is a housing loan type problem. So I expect the solution dollar-wise to come out of that particular budget. And I know there are resources there to do that, so I would hope that would be part of the conversation.
Well, I think it's probably a combination of both, housing and SCSD, and I, because when you have on the one hand one entity that encourages the other entity in going forward with public policy, you know, I think it's both entities that are responsible for coming up with some solutions, and hopefully that's what's taking place. My discussion with Gibson, you can't have one piece of it without the other piece. So,
Madam Chair, if I can add in also here, there's really two issues that we're trying to play with. The one is the impact on the housing department and their loan portfolio. And really the larger issue is what the rate structure does to the rest of the private market out there. And so we're looking at really two different pieces. The one, as Representative Schrader said, we're trying to find how can we self-finance the housing issues, the loan portfolio issues, and those facilities that are in that loan portfolio. Secondary issue, and I believe the larger issue, is what is the long-term impact of this budget decision we make on the larger industry, the long-term care system that we have out there. So we are trying to play both sides of this out.
Madam Chair.
I'll take a little different tack on some of this, because I probably come from a different outlook on it. I do spend a lot of time in these facilities seeing patients, and we've gone a long ways down the road in a specific direction. These people have given up their own homes, moved into these assisted living facilities, are healthier because of it, get their medications properly because of it, save health care costs because of it. And to make an abrupt about turn in this program this time is something you have to question, not only on a human basis, but on a basis of sound financial policy when you look at the entire budget for the state, not just what you're looking at in this particular agency and these particular homes. We get ourselves in these positions probably the best of intentions, and it's easy to start looking at cutting budgets here, but you've got to look at the entire picture before you do that, and I'm sure you're doing that. But don't forget the human equation here also. A lot of these people have no place else to go now. We cut these funds too much, some of these homes close, and we will rightfully hear about that. And I don't want to be throwing these people out in the streets. Not that we do that, but if the cuts are too draconian, I believe we're going to see some serious problems there we have to deal with. So I know it's a real battle for you to reach a compromise figure that everybody can live with, but I'm hoping you'll be able to do that.
Madam Chair, Representative Bates, we appreciate that.
Representative Carlson.
Thank you. I'd just like to affirm what Representative Bates just said, and also talk about not being short-sighted. When we look at the demographics, we have an increasingly aging population, and so to do an about-face now in light of what we're going to look at 10, 15, 20 years from now, it seems crazy. So we need to not be looking just at the short term, but to be looking at what that's going to advance in the future.
Madam Chair, Representative Carlson, that is part of what has taken so long with this issue, is that we're trying to avoid that short-term fix. The dollars here are almost irrelevant in the large scheme of things. We're only talking about, the differences that we're talking about are not that much, considering the long-term impact on the system that we're discussing. So that's why it's We've wrangled back and forth on this, trying to make the right decision here.
Senator Duncan.
Madam Chair, I guess I'm trying to keep something straight here. On the, we talk about the assisted living, and we're also talking about the private, where individuals are taking have maybe 6 or 7 or 8 people in their home to. Now, where is that going to come in? Because that's obviously the senior.
Madam Chair,
the reason I ask, I was in one the other day, and they're in danger, and that's why I just don't want to.
The current issue, Senator Duncan, that we're talking about is the issue that was discussed during our overview, where in the rate restructuring for assisted living facilities, that restructuring that was proposed would have had an adverse effect on those facilities that the state has actually, that's the issue, and the governor's office and others have been working to try to solve or resolve that problem. And it is a twofold problem. It, one, has the implications for the housing community development, their bond portfolio, since they hold the paper. And then the other one, if you look at the system statewide, what happens with those facilities? So that's the one that we're waiting on getting some information back from the governor's office, from the DAS on that issue.
I just want to add our concern expressed during the discussion that if assisted livings are closed in the rural areas, they really don't have any place to go. So this is a real concern, and I hope Governor will include that in his consideration.
Is there any other questions? And I think, Chad, I share the concern that two things. That one, that we're sure that, and I know that we've been talking to Mark Gibson, that you're working diligently to assure that we don't have a negative impact on the long term, because it goes beyond just this session. Mm-hmm. It's an issue that we have to look at as to what's going to happen to those facilities, what's going to happen to the seniors who are in those facilities, and where those facilities are located, because the bulk of them, as I understand it, a lot of them are in the rural communities where you cannot make the double bed accommodation that had been discussed here. So there's a lot of variables that's involved in this particular issue. Representative Patrick.
Well, I just wanted to agree with you, Madam Chair. You know, I looked at the reports that came back from the consultants on this particular issue, and I think about what Dr. Bates had said about the human cost of what this is, and I hope the governor has abandoned his... If you're going to pay based on acuity, that's one thing, but to double bunk these people and do some other things, I hope the governor has abandoned that particular tack that he was trying to take, and I would, you know, I for one on this committee am not going to be one of the people who, if the governor comes back with a proposal on double bunking these people up in these facilities, I'm not going to be one of the people that's going to be supportive of that particular piece, and I hope that piece is off the table. So just to deliver the I know you're only the messenger, so we certainly appreciate it, but you know, to me that's not acceptable. To me it's acceptable to look at acuity, you know, down the road, but we've made promises to people, we're on the verge of a continuing healthcare crisis with the boomers now retiring, and to me the double bunking piece is acceptable. I just don't think it's tenable for the facilities, and I don't think it serves the human side of what we try and do, and it doesn't the dignity of the people in these facilities.
I'm going to move your cursor. So, thank you. Because of the missing or the information that we do not have with the reshoot, we will not do current service level adoption this morning. But we will go ahead and discuss the add-backs so that we can get those then at least resolved. And then at our next meeting, hopefully we will have all the information that we need on the current service level and the adoption of that. So with that, I think we can start the discussion on the add back. And I know that it has been everybody's concern about OPI. And I had, and I don't hear any nays.
Madam Chair, can I make a comment?
Representative Schrader.
I have a I think we should try and fully fund OPI. I think that's been the sense of the committee. But I have a concern about how it's done, and I'd like to offer for discussion and a budget note possibly to be included in this budget. LFO has asked at the committee's direction several times for demonstration of how much revenue the sliding scale for those above 100% of poverty level up to 200% brings in. It's been very difficult to get that. The counties don't keep good records, apparently, and it's not something they've tracked. And I think in this day and age, it's probably appropriate to try and track that in a very logical manner. And the latest information we got back, it didn't have some of the counties in it. And some of the counties that reported had zero or had lost their records or something like this. And I think to maximize our use of OPI and to see if we can get, you know, more people covered, I'd like the budget note in there possibly that talks about unscheduling the second half of the OPI, maybe half of it, until we get, you know, from all the counties a good methodology, a calculation, a protocol for how they are going to keep track of their sliding scale collection so that we can, you know, again, I think the statute says you feed that back into OPI, which is good. So I think we need to be doing that rather than maybe just letting it slide by and sort of not paying attention to that. I think that would really help the program in the long run.
Yes, I would concur, and I would also, in fact, Senator Yee, I was going to ask you if you would be willing to work with the agency so that we have a one-page performance measure by the time we present this before.
Performance measures regarding how many people they serve.
Yes, you know, we've asked each agency to give us one-page measures, and you're very skilled at getting that information out of the agency.
not very skilled because I have the chair's assignment behind me, and that makes it a lot more powerful.
And
Madam Chair and members, I think we have a one-page summary of performance.
I would like Senator Yee to take a look at that one pager and refine it and bring it back to us, because I know how good he is.
But basically, what is the committee's wishes? Are you looking at how many people do they serve, senior services, or what kind of programs do they offer?
I think it's
how many people they serve in each program, and what is the cost per person, and what are the goals? I think Representative Bates is shaking his head.
Madam Chair, maybe I misunderstood what Representative Schrader said, but my understanding and my thoughts on it are that, very simply, people at or below the 100% of the poverty level have no means testing for this program and shouldn't. And between 100 and 200% of poverty level, there is a means test and a sliding scale for what the individual pays and what the state pays and the federal funds. And above 200% of the poverty level, basically the services are paid for by the individual. My understanding further is that some counties have tracked that and have recovered funds on a sliding scale, and some counties have not. And what we want to see is which counties have and have not, the counties that have not, we want to see what their plan is for collecting that in the future, so that money can be turned back into OPI so we can, if anything, expand services. And that's my understanding of what I'm looking for. I think that's what Representative Schrader is looking for. And that's, we want a statewide program that says if you're between 100 and 200% of the poverty level, you're on a sliding scale for OPI, and any money collected will go back into the program. That's my understanding.
That's
is that correct?
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
So the chair's assignment for this is to for performance measure for OPI.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And to look at the ability to pay and sliding scale.
Right.
maybe it should be a two-person committee.
You want to have administrator to issue? That's, because I think that once we receive this information from the agency, the first question that probably jumps out at all of us, why weren't all the counties keeping this kind of information? And some counties do and some counties don't, and yet it is required that they do have a sliding scale, so it seems to me that if that's required, then that kind of information should be coming from all the counties. So you may want to work with.
Madam Chair, I've asked this question before, and they always said it costs more to collect than the amount they actually collected. But with the advance in technology, they should be able to track up this and be able to collect from the ones who are able to pay.
You know, if they don't collect anything, then this is zero. But to simply not report anything at all, which is what this report implies, then that's a whole another story. I'd rather see the zero than to see, well, no, we didn't do anything.
At least we should have the data available.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure.
Representative Schrader.
Follow up on this. Ask LFO. We had talked about waiver for trying to seek a waiver to get some match for OPI, and I wasn't sure if that was implicit in 2519 or if that's some direction we need to give the governor and the legislative leadership. That would be another way to maximize our money and get more people served. That'd be our goal.
Madam Chair and members, let me respond briefly to that. My understanding right now is that this is not a Medicaid program. Consequently, it's not eligible for Medicaid match, kind of by definition. We use some of the OPI money, and I couldn't tell you offhand how much, I believe, to match older Americans at funding. But I would defer to the agency to remind me how much that is as far as OPI is concerned.
It just seems like there'd be an opportunity to leverage this, our general fund dollars, through some program at the federal level. And if we have a new administration and there's new thoughts, perhaps there's a way to go about that. I'd be open to anything the agency would be interested in trying to pursue.
Has the agency had any discussion at all with the federal government?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Roger Auerbach, Administrator of Senior and Disabled Services Division. We have not had any specific discussion with the federal government on the OPI program, Madam Chair. We have had discussion with the federal government over my years as administrator many, many times about the potential expansion of the waiver program. Because of budgets the way they have been at the state level, we have not pursued anything other than just discussion, Madam Chair, nor have we had any specific direction to do otherwise.
Well, given that the new administration is probably open to being creative at the state level, you may want to start having some discussion with your federal counterparts. Just to kind of test the water, put your toe in it, and see if it might be a little tepid.
Different issue?
Yes.
I'd like to have the committee consider, should there be an opportunity with the IBACs, putting some more money back in the AAA methodology. Some of the counties are having quite a bit of trouble, you know, quite frankly, giving as good or better care, not getting the same pay rates, if you will, that the state-operated facilities are, and that's been a concern since I've been in the legislature. So if there's an opportunity there, I'd appreciate the committee considering. I think it's $3.5 million or something in that range. Big issue in my county, and I think other counties, too.
Madam Chair, I'd like join Representative Schrader. In fact, I've just been kind of reviewing some of those priorities, and that would be one of my high ones dealing with those AAAs. So if we could do something in that area, we'd like to.
I haven't heard from Dr. Bates in the nursing facility rates.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir. Are we going to,
I'm not sure what the proper procedure for bringing this in.
Well, we're just discussing what we should be put in our add back list.
My concern is that we rebase the nursing home rates, and as the discussion went earlier, we have to look at ELFs, and we have to look at residential treatments, which are foster homes and more intense homes. I believe the governor's initial budget, he actually asked for more money for residential and foster homes because they have a higher acuity as far as need is concerned, and I'd like to see that discussed. The rebasing of extended care facilities needs to be done, and I shouldn't use the phrase extended care facilities. I think most people know them as nursing homes. It's a complex issue because of decreasing length of stays, and yet the patients going into them commonly have higher acuity needs because they're post-hospital patients now. There's some Medicare funds involved in that. But once they go past the 30-day eligibility for Medicare, they drop back onto the state. So that all needs to be brought into the discussion and brought forward. And then, of course, the ELF funds we've already talked about. I really do believe there needs to be some rebasing of that, and if we don't do that, we're going to put ourselves in some jeopardy. I know there's been a big discussion, too, that there's a excess number of beds for extended care facilities, and I know that's true to a degree, again, because of the changing demographics, people aren't staying as long. It doesn't change the fact you need some of those beds yet. Whether some of those homes should actually close down, and especially the big cities where you have more choices, I'm not certain. But that should also be part of the discussion. In rural areas, we have maybe one extended care facility, one nursing home. Closing it down is not a good option. Sending those people hours away from their family and homes is inappropriate. So it's a complex issue, and I understand that, but I do think that needs to be looked at and carefully rebased, especially when you consider the mule money is coming through this group, and I think it's
we've changed the name.
Oh, it's now Mupple. The Mupple money is coming.
The Mupple money.
Politically incorrect, and thank you for the correction here.
Representative
Schrader. It would seem, considering our extensive use of the Mupple money, it would be inappropriate not to put a little something in the rebasing arena.
It's a form of your money.
I think since that's the source, and I would agree that it's all these issues actually are interrelated. Mm-hmm. I mean, when you really begin to look at the system that was set up to have a system of continuum of care. And, you know, when we looked at the budget when we came in, we were at risk of undoing, what you will, of years of where Oregon had put together a continuum service delivery system for its seniors. And I guess that's probably the most troubling aspect of looking at this whole budget of how do we restore it to assure that we have the population who can remain in their home, and then we have these other programs that are there to allow individuals, as we all advance, to be able to be able, whether it is assisted living facility or then into nursing home, recognizing that demographics have changed, but recognizing also that we wanted to have the services available in Oregon for our seniors. So I do think that they're interrelated, and there's a linkage that occurs between all of the programs that are there. And to say one or the other, I do not think that if we did that we would continue the efforts in Oregon of having the continuum. For me, a policy standpoint, we went to where we encourage the in-home, and we encourage individuals through Oregon Project Independence and other modes, and we should continue to do that. And then we recognize that everyone cannot stay within their own home, that there had to be care available for those who cannot. We recognize that as care worsens, that there has to be, the nursing home and those for that. But I think for me, the policy is, do we continue what we started here in Oregon? And if we, say that, yes, that's what we continue, then we have to look at the resource base, and that including the rebasing and some of the other issues. Senator Duncan, and then
Madam Chair, I'm sure you probably have this someplace, but I'm just curious. We've gone through, and we've dealt with the AGs and the PERS and all those, so we have those total dollars pretty well in mind. We probably have a pretty good idea now what the Mupple, or what are you going to call
Mupple.
It, money is going to be. I guess I'm trying to get a picture of what kind of money we have to work with.
Well, as you know, when we came into the discussion, that the co-chairs actually, unlike previous sessions, did not say that if you found the savings within your budget, you could keep your
savings. Right, I understand.
So that means that we're going into a central pot of dollars, and we will be having our priority list along with all the other committees and work for our dollars. And so we're going through this process of doing our add-backs of what we think are the number one priorities for us.
So we're not worried about dollars. We're just...
We're trying to get our add-backs.
I'm sure.
Representative
Schrader. Well, I think we are a little bit worried about dollars.
I mean, yeah.
To the extent that this committee has an opportunity to do add-backs, I think if we're willing to make some tough decisions in a variety of our budgets, I think that lends some credibility that we have a little higher priority. I think we also have a higher priority because of the people we're serving, if you will, on this committee. And to that end, I guess I'd like the committee to discuss at some point is the employment initiative. We're talking about adding back quite a lot of money here. I mean, the add back so far that we've discussed could easily be, you know, $25-35 million here. And while there may be some opportunities in some other human services budgets, I looked at this employment initiative. The discussion we had on that, it's very questionable as to whether or not it's getting us the same return that some of these other programs. And I'd venture to say that I support the federal policy, certainly. You know, health care should not be a barrier. Losing your health care should not be a barrier to full employment. There should be no discrimination. But when you put $5 million, $2 million general fund into a program that has very questionable results, I think it was like 1 in 8 actually got a job out of this whole thing. You have duplicate FTE. We have, I think, some 33 or 34 senior disabled people dealing with this. We also have like, I think 19 VRD staff dealing with this. And then we also heard this discussion in the mental health budget. I have some serious concerns about duplication of resources and, quite frankly, the efficacy of this program. It's mostly a feel-good program, and I think it's important for people to feel worthwhile. But I would suggest that the federal policy itself, which states that they don't lose their health care, that we have an opportunity for disabled to work, that's excellent. But to put a ton of money into something from SDSD, VRD should be doing this, not SDSD. That's my pitch. VRD can and should be doing this. I don't think we need to have SDSD dealing with, the employment initiative portion of this program. And that's $2 million that we could save, quite frankly, and put into full restoration of OPI, the AAAs, the assisted living situation, the nursing facilities. And we do have to look at the other side of the equation, as Senator Duncan has alluded to.
Senator, also AFS has employment division also.
That is true.
Being the division. So really the three should be combined and maybe combined with the employment department so they can reach more employers. So I think this is a very important point that we need to focus on. Getting $2 million makes a lot of difference.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's a consensus of this group that we wanted to fully bring back Oregon Project Independence, and that fully to restore 15 through 17, and also the restructuring and the base rates for assisted living facilities and adult foster homes and the residential care facilities. We were concerned about those reductions that were made in the governor's budget that directly impact the senior services division ability to continue to provide the continuum of care.
Basic
the basic service within that division. And so I don't think that there's any disagreement from this group. I haven't heard anything about the elimination of RSVP, the volunteer program. But to me, that's on the one hand, where you get real benefit because the volunteers who are working are a resource that helps to save dollars. I mean, it's kind of interesting. They're an unpaid resource, and yet here we eliminate them. Senator Shield.
Yeah.
And I'd like to include that on the add-back list.
I followed both this and your previous statement very closely, and while you want to restore this whole continuum of services, I'm concerned about something that doesn't get mentioned too often, and that is that in the governor's budget, there was like a $5 million hit that occurred to SDSD, and if we compartmentalize and add things back, you know, project by project, we never look at what may be happening at the center of the beast, and so you have to ask the question, how are they taking that hit? And if they end up taking it out of the field instead of at the center, you again would end up crippling or at least hampering the, you know, the Oregon Project Independence or the AAAs or whatever, their ability to respond. And so I just don't want to lose that piece either.
Well, I we haven't gone there. I think the discussion on the administrative piece, there's two questions to ask, and I believe it was Representative Schrader who talked about increasing, recommended increase of $3 million for the AAAs. And, you know, if you look at the way they're organized, AAAs does a good share of the field activity, if you will, and recognizing there's probably some counties that they do not. And yet there has been that disparity, if you will, of how those dollars flow. You know, at the state actually receives a lot more dollars than the field, and yet if I look at the field and do an analysis, the field probably does, and I don't want to get into this, but they do a yeoman's job out there. And so I do think that we are discussing administratively, but I think this panel is trying to equalize, if you will, some of those issues. Senator Duncan.
Madam Chair, along that same line, and I hate to, you know, be just looking at my county, but I'm particularly more familiar with that one, and I know there are others in the same boat. But as they're looking at their cuts within their areas and so forth, I could see them saying, wait a minute, we don't have to do this, and throw it right back to the state.
Yep.
And then you're going to have to pick up some big costs in there. So I think they're not asking for the total, but if you get some equity, then you'll keep them going. But there are people in my county who said, hey, turn it back to the state because we're picking up this burden.
Representative Carlson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to make sure that senior transportation made our ad back list as well. I think that's a critical component, and I haven't heard anyone bring that up.
Madam Chair and members, I don't believe that the senior transportation is in this particular budget.
Is that going to be looked at in their budget? As part of their budget?
Madam Chair and Representative Carlson, I don't know.
It was passed out, was not in it, but I made a comment at the time that's something we'd want to get back in if at all possible.
And so, Madam Chair, would there be some sort of a bill that would happen, or would it happen at the end of the session?
It would be budget consideration the same as what we're doing here. In the ODOT budget.
Okay, thank you.
Madam Chair.
Representative Bates.
If I could be allowed to make a comment. The programs we set up for seniors in the state of Oregon are recognized nationally, some of the best that are done, not only for what they do for our seniors, but the cost we get them done for. It's concerning to me when I've looked at all these budgets for the first time in my life that we have agencies that I have some grave concerns about how effective they are, but that this budget is not one of them, and that we've made, and the governor suggested, some significant cuts. I know it's difficult for us to prioritize agency to agency and even within agencies, but if we could, my vote would be that this is an agency that's done a good job, has offered some very good programs to seniors, has a good continuum of care for seniors, is noted across the country for being a good agency, and the things we want to add back in here, I think, are actually cost-saving issues. If we were to follow what other states have done and end up with a large number of patients in nursing homes, or I should say seniors in nursing homes, the cost would balloon. And I think the things we're talking about, add-backs here, are in the long run cost-saving devices and significantly improve the quality of life of our seniors. And I would make a strong recommendation that we work hard to get these add-backs back in. They're important to our state and to our seniors.
Representative Patrick, do you have something to add to this discussion?
I like your add-backs, Madam Chair, and I like the add-backs we came up with on the task force, and I'm sure some wonderful and nice things were said. I want to just continue to work on the add-backs to the budget.
Hmm. Thank you, Mr. Whip.
I was out in the hall whipping to make sure we're getting votes today.
Sometime the whip isn't here because he is out there whipping to get votes, and then he passes me notes when he arrives to tell me, let me know where
I'm going
to
whip this budget, too, and make sure it gets the votes when it goes out with the gap back.
There was one area that was not discussed this morning and that I would like, and I understand that Mr. Britton will have a meeting, and that's to look at whether or not there's any cost savings in working with the veterans program and looking at the ability to get a better match ratio. So they will be working to look at identifying whether or not by doing some different kinds of program and to see if there aren't some savings there. I do think that as we go through these budgets, the more we can identify where we can reduce overlap and can identify where possibly partnering in different ways that we can increase resources is a good thing. I would also think that we may want to this budget will come back not tomorrow, because Mr. Britton tells me that he has some more information to obtain, and I don't know if you'll get it ready by tomorrow or not. So it will be rescheduled. Where's my little sheet? There we are. It would probably, Mr. Britton, if you can have it ready for us by Wednesday, do you give you and George?
Yeah. Madam Chair.
Or would it be better for me to delay it until after we get the assisted living the living facility information?
Madam Chair and members,
tomorrow's Tuesday.
I think that might be a better idea.
Yeah.
To get as much information in the door as we can.
Okay. We will delay this budget work session until next week then, which would allow us in the time to get have the governor's office, DAS, to have the information on the assisted living facility information. You will then have the information on the reshoot figures so that to your satisfaction that they're accurate. It gives Senator Yee and Representative Schrader some time to talk to the agency about performance measures and some of those issues, and we will schedule another agency in their stead. But it gives us time to really work that, and it'll give me some time to work your budget notes so that we will be ready to roll next week on this budget. Senator Hartung.
Yeah, Madam Chairman, could we have John ask the DHS and the various parts of DHS to what extent they're able to analyze the amount of volunteerism they do have? And the reason I ask that, I was so impressed this weekend. I went to the dedication of the new addition to the Cedar Mill Library, the community library, which is now the third biggest one in Washington County. And they have 220 volunteers there, mostly senior citizens, which is a great addition to the opportunities for productive activity on the part of the seniors. But that takes the place of 10 full-time FTEs working in that library. And it's just amazing what something like that can do for the whole community, the schools, the seniors, the youngsters. And I would like to know if we're taking full advantage in our DHS services of volunteers.
Madam Chair and Senator Hartung, I will ask the department to compile some kind of report on that for you.
Senator Yee, Madam Chair, when you want us to do performance measures for the project independence, do you want us to do performance measure on the AAA agency their performance, their cost per client, so we can have a comparison of their performance versus state employees.
You know, I think, Madam Chair, I think we did get that through the audits or something. I've seen that
before. Yeah, there's
before.
No, we didn't.
So there's an audit that doesn't have, it recommends doing performance.
We didn't get a performance measure for the AAA employees.
Well, I'm talking to the department about and the analysts, is that performance measures will work their way through down to the delivery system so that you're not just talking about the agency's performance measures, but where they have contract and the service is being delivered out there in the field level, that we need to know whether or not the dollars that we're spending at this level is being carried out at that level. And it's not just DHS that I'm asking that they do that for OPI, but I'm asking the agencies to start doing that with all of their contracted services so that next session, see, you started me in on this, next session, and thank you very much, next session that when we come back as legislators, they will begin to know what we're purchasing out there, whether it's through the county, whether it's through AAAs, but that you're linking the performance measures clear through the system.
Mm-hmm. Whether the providers are actually providing the service we contracted for.
Yes.
And that has a lot to do with their oversight and
right.
monitoring.
The data that you're asking of the agency should be the same information that the agency is asking of its contractee.
Mm-hmm.
So that we're getting consistent representative process.
Madam Chair, I would be remiss if I didn't mention the senior mental health projects, too. I think it was a relatively small amount of money, so if we could take a look at that on the ad back list as well.
That wasn't in mental health. And there's one that we did not discuss, but I'll probably deal with an alcohol and drugs budget. But that's an issue that's there that doesn't get discussed about the alcohol and drug treatment need for seniors. And we tend to not to discuss it, and yet I know that is a real issue and a real problem. And that no one tends to raise, and that happens when you're isolated and lonely, and speak for the chronological advantage group. But it's one that I know an individual raised with me and said, there is little or no resources that go into the senior population to address and deal with that issue. And so whether we talk to the Alcohol and Drug Agency about it, but I do think it's something that we need to look at. Senator Hartung and then Senator Duncan.
Speaking of alcohol and substance abuse, and I know there's a real interest in the gambling addiction, are those programs coordinated in any way or is each one separate? The gambling addiction compared to the alcohol?
Madam Chair.
Representative Bates probably knows more.
Here we go again.
Probably visits.
I'm getting tired here.
Yeah,
sure.
He's one of each, huh?
Yeah, I have the gambling addiction program is actually an excellent one. It's run by lottery funds. It's part of the lottery funds
right.
program. And we have good information to indicate that since we started the lottery in the state and funded that program, we actually have lower levels of addiction to gambling now than we did before the lottery. And it's a kind of a surprising status, but it is. And prior to lottery funds, I dealt with my own, anecdotally, I dealt my own practice with gambling as a major problem. And it's sort of disappeared now that we have lottery funds taking care of it. They get big referrals, and while there's still serious problems out there, it's much lower than it used to be.
So is that any way coordinated with drug and alcohol?
No, and they're quite different programs, and actually they're quite different clientele from my point of view. The patients I see that have a problem with gambling don't necessarily have a problem with drugs and alcohol.
Doug, will you tell us how the department coordinates with those issues?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, both of the A&D or the gambling addiction program is now part of the A&D office. So there is, I think Representative Bates is right that the clientele is, there is some crossover, but they are two different groups of folks. But there is, since they are in the same office, there is a level of coordination a lot in the prevention area in those areas too. That is a relatively new presence in the department, and we do contract with outside organizations to provide that gambling addiction treatment. And it is a different treatment group or a different set of providers, but we are trying in the department to move toward that coordination.
Madam Chairman, Doug, so would it be safe to assume now that the gambling addiction is in a way coordinated with A&D? Are any of the lottery funds used for alcohol and drug treatment then?
Madam Chair, Senator Hartung, we would not be allowed to spend money directly for A&D out of the lottery funds, because those lottery funds are statutorily or maybe constituted. I'm not sure. I have to go back and take a look. Are directed toward gambling addiction. That doesn't mean we can't try to coordinate those efforts at the state level as well as the local level in our efforts around that.
Thank you.
Doug, what are we doing in substance abuse?
What are we doing? I see what you're saying. Roger may have a better idea, but we've had some discussions internally that that's an area that is, the need is becoming recognized and is very likely, unmet. So in terms of what we've been doing, Roger, can you help with that? Okay. I think I'll address that to Barbara Somaglio and make sure she addresses that or is ready to address you.
Would you?
Yeah, at the work session, I believe, in a couple days, A&D is in front of you.
Senator Shields.
Madam Chair, I could
after
be...
After that, Senator Duncan's next. He's a little more chronologically advantaged.
I just don't want us to forget the in-home. And I think I just glanced at this. It talks about what are the pros and cons of a reimbursement system which pays the same amount for a given service no matter where the client resides. And I'm not pushing for that right now, but as I mentioned earlier, I was in a, I guess you would call it an in-home care center the other day. The woman has had a person there for 17 years. And, in fact, is moving up into her house now, I guess, for some reason. She just is not going to make it. And they're providing a lot of service for people, and they're just not making it with the reimbursement. She says, that, look at the cost of the bed and what she's getting back. It's not there. So are we, on our add-back list, can we take a look at that whole area, too?
I think we can take that policy discussion, and I think we need to get Mr. Britton and the agency, because you're talking about the distribution of funds is what I'm hearing you, right? If I understand what you're saying.
Yeah, because I'm hearing that a lot of those in-home kinds of programs are really in jeopardy, too. And if they go, where do those people go?
Here you go. The rate issue for in-home as well as the other issues. I believe that was all in, I looked at the add-back list, that the foster homes were also included in that list.
Madam Chair, let's make sure I think we understanding what we're talking about. In-home care for us as a terminology are those folks that come into a client's house and provide services. And then there is something called adult foster home where, for example, someone may open up their run an adult foster home where they have four or five or whatever number of clients in that house and they're providing services. And the whole package around what we call substitute homes, which are the ELFs, the residential care facilities, and the adult foster homes, was around and trying to start bringing those rates together. And ELF rates are significantly higher than the RCFs and the adult foster home rates. So that you have a rate discussion or disparity in rates around those cases, but also a rate discussion that needs to take place.
Senator Scheer.
Yes. There's a huge complexity of things that we're talking about all at once, and you need a scorecard to keep track of them all. But, Doug, I'd heard someplace that there's only one little program for senior drug and alcohol, and it's been cut about $450,000, something like that. And yet, it doesn't seem that anybody around here knows much about it. What's the status of that?
Madam Chair, Senator Shields, I'm not sure what program you're talking about, but let me talk to you after, and then let's make sure we're talking on the same sheet.
Senator Duncan.
The other day I'd asked for a list of, COLA concerns, and I was looking at another one here, whether or not we've considered the COLA for substitute homes.
Madam Chair, Senator Duncan, we presented to the committee, and I think it was passed out to you late last week, a list of what it would cost to buy back by division, plus what are not covered under the COLAs. And the substitute homes are one of those on that list.
Thank you, Doug. Any further discussion? All of your answers have been satisfied today. Tomorrow, we will not have, we will do some public hearings, and we'll have work session on a couple of bills tomorrow. So would you please be here so I can get your vote? And we will bring SDSD back next week. And we will probably go ahead, and I need to talk, we will have alcohol and drugs next, and we may be able to, can we move, I might talk to Sheila about moving them up, since we won't be able to do SDSD.
Is that 8 or 8:30?
8. All committee, morning committees are meeting at 8, I will restate it, 8 a.m. for all committees. Until session ends, and we will all adjourn at 9:45. So we have been actually reduced by 15 minutes. That gives time for the afternoon committees, which are not meeting afternoons anymore, will be meeting at 10 o'clock. So it is very important that you're here. We've got a lot of work to do between now. That is, unless we want to start going into night sessions. And I didn't see any volunteers for us to do evening sessions. So the only excuse is if you've got tied up in traffic on I-5 and couldn't get here.
Since for my colleagues' benefit, 8 o'clock is 30 minutes before 8:30. Does that have anything to do with the, what would we do with the 7:30 meeting?
Now another option could be that we meet at 7:45.
That sounds up to 7:30.
Okay. So 8 o'clock. If there's no further discussion, we are adjourned until tomorrow.
Okay. Nice job, Matt.